This is NRL Boom Rookies.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Boom Rookies presented by ESPN. I am Matt Bungard, and with me today, Nick Campton. Hello.
Hey, everyone.
What's doing, mate?
Just more podcasts, man. We're doing so many of these in quick succession that every time you ask me how you're doing, like, I don't always have a flip answer, you know?
Yeah, and it's getting less sincere from me every time.
That's right.
Yes. Something else that rapidly declined was the South Sydney season in 2023. So joining us now to pick up the pieces and try to work out what the hell is going to change in 2024, Phil Lutton, welcome.
Hello, gents. Thanks for having me back for my once-a-year guest appearance.
Twice a year if we make the finals. So, yeah, last year only once.
Twice a year, yeah. And I can confirm I reckon my red-hot take is I've got absolutely no idea how Souths are going to go and probably less confidence than I just don't know. I just don't know this year. Mm. No, that second half of the season last year was as putrid as every metric of it looked.
Yep.
And there's nothing redeeming about it at all. And I'm not interested in injuries. I'm not interested in anything. It was absolutely disgusting football.
Correct.
And it looked like a wooden spoon team. So
yeah,
where do you go?
I can't remember ever feeling that helpless watching them over a period of time, like even in the early 2000s, because we knew that those teams were meant to be bad. There wasn't any sort of conflicting emotions in me. It was just like, well, they're trying their best. And if we win a game every now and again, it's fine. Most of these blokes played in a grand final for us 2 years ago. What the hell is going on? In the first half of this season, we looked like the best team in the comp, and now we're getting dusted by all and sundry. It made absolutely no sense. I hope that some hard lessons were learned by everyone at the club that's still there, which is pretty much everyone. There's been very little squad turnover from last year to this year, which could be a good thing if you hope that they've learned lessons from that. And it could be a bad thing if the rot has set in and continues to rot away in 2024.
You guys have kind of caught me on my heels here, because normally, you know, my dear friend Bertrand is, you know, positive about Souths to a delusional degree, right? Which is good. That's how you're meant to be about your team.
Yeah, I think they become sixth last year. That's really I was wrong. So
no, but like week to week, every week you say, I don't see why we shouldn't win this game. Lutz, you're a confident guy and you know your footy as well. You're always high on them too. So to hear you guys talk this way, it's uncomfortable. I'm not sure.
I am
like
sorry,
it.
Nick.
We're not here to make you comfortable, Nick. This is a brave new world of digital, digital landscape. It's disrupting. We're disrupting the Rabbitohs.
Yeah, we're disrupting the red and green space. And
speaking of said disruption, what's the biggest lesson that the two of you would want this team to learn from last year? Lutz, you go first. What's the big thing that you want them to learn from that horrible slide over the back half of last season?
It's probably a really boring answer, but I want them to learn the value of fundamentals again. And this is not a team. In fact, I've been critical of Souths for being just too much of a system team. Like they have been for me too predictable. But last year it just seemed they were incapable of completing sets, incapable of building pressure, incapable of doing all the really boring things that make really good football teams really good football teams. And it was infuriating because, in theory, that's one of the things you can fix. Like, catch a ball, finish sets, chase hard. These are all, you know, in coach speak, controllables. And I think I'll be interested to hear what Matty thinks, but when I was watching games, it felt like even that was well beyond their control. And just so many soft turnovers, so much soft football at both ends of the field. And I just want to see South get themselves into some games at the start of the season, because I want to know what's changed. I don't know what has changed. I want to see them. I want them to show me something has changed, but nothing will change if they can't get themselves into some games of footy. So that's the thing I want to see better. And that was probably one of the most disappointing things, because like I said, you can fix that. You can fix that.
It sounds reductive, but you're right, mate. And there were games last year. I think back to that Knights game, the Sharks game, and there was a couple of others in there as well, but like where they literally just couldn't hold the ball. Like there was a half of football where they completed, I think, 30% or something, a whole half. And it's like, you're not winning football games. I think there was one of the halves, I think they had nine sets of footy. or 9 completed sets. Either way, that number is comically low. And it wasn't just that they were losing, it was the manner in which they were losing. But there weren't any close losses. There weren't any games where you thought, oh, geez, if a couple of things had gone the other way, everything would have been all right. It was just week after week of abject failure. It just looked like nobody wanted to be there. That game against the Roosters to finish the season really summed it up, I think. And, you know, you go back through the last 10 or so weeks of the season, and South suddenly won 2 games in that stretch, and one of them was against the West Tigers, who came last, and the other one was against the Dragons, who came 15th. And in all those other games, they got smashed by the Roosters, they got smashed by the Knights, they got ambushed by the Sharks in Perth, which I think was the first time where I was kind of like, oh, shit. Yeah, this isn't great. And they got embarrassed by the Broncos up in that game, when that was supposed to be the week where, oh, they've come through the other side of this hard period where they played the Raiders and the Dragons and the Bulldogs, and you could kind of make excuses for those games because they had so many guys not playing in each of those 3 losses. But that Broncos game was when they got basically everyone except Latrell Mitchell back, I think. And we kind of went, well, if these guys are fair dinkum, then we're going to see them get back to their first half of the season form tonight. And it just didn't happen that night, if you remember. They just got towed up by the Broncos that night, and they never, ever recovered at that point. They beat the Tigers, they beat the Dragons, and they got pumped by everybody else that they played. And I would love to have been inside that club, inside those walls, and to know what happened or what the factors were. I know the Sam Burgess stuff didn't help. I know that was sort of hanging like a dark cloud over that club. There was warring factions at play and all that shit, but none of that stuff should be such a distraction that you put in the performances that they put in over the last 2 months of the 2023 season. I can't remember a collapse like it. I think our dear friend Scott Bailey Campo said that it was the first time ever that a team had been first on the ladder after 10 rounds and failed to make the finals ever. And it's not great. And honestly, I think back to that Magic Round night when we played the Melbourne Storm, who we never beat, and embarrassed them. And I thought, geez, if these guys can just stay healthy, we're a red hot chance here. And I don't think anybody could have possibly expected what we saw basically from that point going forward for the rest of the season. It was really, really shocking stuff down the stretch. And I just hope that maybe if you guys got a bit too comfortable, this is a club that from 2018 to 2022 either made a prelim or made the grand final, came within a goal kick and an intercept of winning said grand final. And maybe some of those guys have got a bit too comfortable and read a bit too much of their own press about how they could be the next team to knock the Panthers off, or they could be this new era of a dominant team, because that's how well they were playing in the first half of the year. And honestly, for most parts of the regular season in the last few years, that they've had games where they've just looked fantastic. And maybe all that caught up with them and they just thought, look, we're having a couple of rough weeks. We'll go through the motions. We'll win a couple of these games. We'll get to the finals. We'll figure it out. Yeah. But they just forgot to win those games.
I wonder too, like, I was so frustrated, Maddie, as a fan listening to, you know, I always sort of listen to the morning radios and the sports shows, and everyone's sort of, every week they're sort of, oh, you know, South, I'll tip them. And it just seemed like, have you been watching their games? Like, they have been playing awful football. Like, they look impotent as a football team.
Yeah.
A team that completely lost their way. And I was sort of, after a while, I was like, you have to cut about 3 or 4 losses. You're like, well, they might bounce back. After 6 or 7, you're like, mate, they are really struggling. And I've never been a person, when I was a journo, to sort of really highlight players that need to do this or need to do that. But the reality is, I think they've put themselves in that position now as a club where it's going to be a huge focus on individual players, fair or not, that are going to have to deliver. We're going to talk about Latrell. I'd like to talk about Ilias because, again, I've got this red-hot take where I'm just not sure where he is, and I'm just not sure where he's going as a player. You saw in that trial game, like, his defense, like, he's a wholehearted kid, right? His defense is fantastic.
Great tackle.
Gets a try from tackling, but I don't employ halfbacks to tackle. That's an added extra. So I don't know if it within that team, especially with White in there now and Cody Walker and Latrell, he already looked like a kid who was terrified to do anything but dig into the line and pass. But he has to. We need him to play a role this year with his kicking game, with his running game. He needs to be able to think on his feet and actually take control of a game. You cannot have a 7 that can't take control of a game.
He's in a remarkably good position for how badly he played last year, in that somehow there's still absolutely no pressure on him externally. Like, there aren't really any headlines being written about Lachlan Ilias and is he the future of Souths as a halfback because of Jack Whiten and Latrell Mitchell and Cody Walker. And it's remarkable to me that he could really have underachieved as much as he did, in my opinion, last year. Great defender. But and to still have his seat be relatively ice cold. I mean, I think apart from me saying it half jokingly, I don't think anyone else has sincerely advocated for Jack Whiten to play halfback. For whatever reason, Dean Hawkins, despite winning New South Wales Cup Player of the Year and looking really good in those games for the reserve grade team last year, despite all the performances, for whatever reason, they just see him as a backup. And the idea that, like, how's it meant to work? Because the idea that a guy can play reserve grade for the whole year, play so well that he wins the reserve grade player of the year, not just for his team, for the entire competition, and then the other guy plays so poorly that, like, everyone's like, well, is this guy really a first grade halfback? The idea that those two things can happen at the same time at the same club, and the guy in first grade is still under pretty much no pressure at all, doesn't really make sense to me. It makes sense of it for me somewhat.
With Ilias, I think what's happened with him is a little bit indicative of something that's sort of enveloped the club, I think, over the last 12 months. It's clear that Jason Demetriou really believes in Lachlan Ilias. He's 100% on it, right? And you want that from your coach and your halfback. You want your coach to believe in the halfback, back the halfback, stand by him 100% and all that. But you can believe in a player and still send them back to reserve grade for a couple of weeks. You can still think he's the future and then decide to put him in New South Wales Cup to learn on the job in a less high-pressure environment. Look what the Roosters did last year with Sam Walker. You know, like, that was a hard choice and a tough choice, and it brought a lot of headlines on both Walker and the Roosters. But in the long run, he'll be better for it. And in the short run, for last year, I thought he was better for it when he came into when he came back into first grade.
Yeah, agree.
And I think something that's really stood out to me at Souths over the last 12 months especially is, like, they have absolute belief in what they're doing, but sometimes I think it goes a little bit too far. And I think that has manifested itself in a bit of a lack of accountability. And that sort of comes out in a lot of excuses being made for why they're not better. You know, it's the reason they're not better is because it's Brad Fittler's fault, because he picked all these players, even though Penrith and the Broncos have as many blokes picked all the time. It's not their fault that they lost because Grant Atkins was the ref. It's not their fault that they lost because Liam Kennedy was the ref. It's not their fault they lost because Latrell Mitchell wasn't there. And when he's back, we're just going to flick a switch and everything's going to be okay. And I think to that end, Lutz, they lost sight of what you were talking about. They lost sight of the process of winning, which is something they've been so adept in years past. And I think, Bert, you're right too, where because they've been winning so much over the last couple of years, I know they've won a premiership, but they've been very consistently successful. They thought they just knew how to do it, and they didn't think they'd have to put the steps in anymore. So to bring it right round to what I asked you in the first place, I think that's what they have to learn from last year. They have to relearn something that they already know, that we've seen this iteration of this team do, you know? So that's the big thing for me. And a lot of that does start with Ilias. So I think it would be good if he didn't have a totally uncontested run to the halfback spot, because with the guys that are around him, with the really strong forward pack, and with Latrell and Cody Walker and Jack Whiten, there's a ticking clock on this stuff, man. You can't keep a team like this together forever.
No, I want to see him fight for the footy a bit. I want to see him overcall Cody. I want to see him overcall Latrell. I want to see him put his hand up and say, no, this is the right play now. I want the football. I'm the halfback for this team. So Adam Reynolds was able to do that on account of him being a wonderful player and being there for many years. But the reality is, when you're in that, and it is hard for halves, we judge them harshly, but they drive teams. They just drive the team, and we need him to take control. My other worry for Souths is I look at Penrith, I look at Brisbane, I look at those teams, and they're so dynamic. They're full of big, fast, young, dynamic kids with amazing footwork and speed. I look at Souths, and I just don't know if we're pretty old, apart from Ilias, we're pretty old through a lot of our key positions. I just don't know if I see these kids tearing holes in defence lines. I just I just wonder if South are just going to be a muddling, middling sort of team this year.
Well, one of the
terrifying prospects.
I take your point, Lutz, and I think that's kind of what Jack Whiten's been brought there to fix.
He's 32.
Yeah, I understand that. I understand he's not a young man, but I think he's still dynamic, fast, strong. I think they've brought him there to be that sort of player. It sounds like you're a little bit low on it, to be honest with you, Lutz. But like, what are you guys thinking about it? What are you feeling about it? Bert, you've joked about him playing halfback, but like, what do you guys think? What do you want from him? Where do you want him to play?
Oh, so can I go first? Oh, sorry, I'm
getting annoying
here. But look, I like Jack White. I like he's really he's cantankerous, aggressive, physical player. And I think the NRL is really undersold the center position for this era. So I love good centers. Like I reckon good teams have good centers. And I reckon now they need to look at state of origin. Like Queensland, you've got a couple of great, fast, like excellent centers. They can win your games of footy. I would actually love if we had a Jack White and Latrell Mitchell center combo. Attacking the line from either side, close to the line. That's the dream for me. I think that is excellent. But so I think Whiten is a good signing. But again, it's just as you get older, I worry about longevity. I worry about whether he can play the amount of footy we want him to play. I wonder where he fits into that sort of shift through the back line. But at his heart, he's just a ball runner. So he likes to get the ball and run and be physical and attack. So I think he's a good signing, but I don't know. To me, he's not a game. I mean, he's a good signing. I don't consider him to be this sort of game changing signing. Partly just because he's old.
I've come around on it pretty full circle since it happened. Well, not full circle because I'll be back where I started. I've done a 180 basically since he signed. I'm hugely in favor of it. I think he's going to be a real problem for defenses if he ends up playing left center, which all signs seem to point to that's where he's going to end up. I think if you like it's strengthening a strength, right? And if you can stack that side with Trell, Cody, him, and AJ finishing it off as well, not to mention Keon Kalomatungi playing on the left last Saturday night on the Charity Shield and looking fantastic as well, I think that is just such a potent thing for opposition teams to deal with. And that's not to, you know, that's not to sell short guys like Campbell Graham on the other side of the field as well. But I just think that if they can get all those parts moving together on that side of the field, it could be a real, real problem for everyone. It's basically impossible to defend if you've got all those guys flying at you out of shape and you don't know who's getting the ball, who's not getting the ball. It's really tough to defend. And Isaiah Tass is a good player, but I think, I don't think any defender on earth is as scared of Isaiah Tass as they are of a flying Jack White.
It gives you too, Matt, that really nice footwork, late footwork, and he's good near the line. Yeah. You know, like he can get a footy 6 or 7 meters out and find a way to scramble over because he's big and strong. So Tass can't do that. So I agree that gives us another great option, and actually might because teams have just been. Teams woke up to that left shift last year.
Yeah,
and
they 100%.
So White is the kind of guy who can disrupt that a bit just with his physicality. He might brush off that tackle and away you go. So I think he is
exactly.
And the
other thing with that is, mate, like I just feel like whilst Whiten has had his criticisms and rightly so over the last couple of seasons, he's a guy that's
special.
Well, yeah, no, I'm not running him from that, but like. In big games for Canberra, more often than not, he's been the guy that's turned up for them. He's been the guy with the big moment. He scored the try in the grand final. He's had lots of big moments in big games for them. And yeah, they will absolutely 100% be some games this year where Cody Walker loses his head and Jack Whiten loses his head and Latrell Mitchell loses his head at the same time. And it's going to be the worst 80 minutes of my life. But then if and when they make the finals and you know, you're looking at an X factor who's going to make a difference when it matters. That's when I think that the signing of Jack Whiten could really bear fruit for them in those big moments down the stretch.
Good use of cantankerous from you earlier, Lutz.
What's that? Like, you like that?
I did like that. Yeah, look. I think Whiten's going to be a big success there. Like Lutz says, he's playing in the centres. All that playmaking stuff that drove me insane at Canberra, that's not going to happen anymore. That's out the door. He's focusing on his strengths, which is running and tackling. And he's still really, really good at that stuff. And even though he is a little bit older, he's, I think, dynamic enough an athlete to still really, really make an impact at the top level. And I think a change of scenery and a new coach and a new approach will really freshen him up. I like him at center as well, but there are, and I especially like what he might be able to offer in yardage. I know you guys are more talking about him as a strike weapon, and he can certainly be that. But when he's playing center for New South Wales or Australia, I actually love him out of his own end because he is such a strong,
which you don't get from Trell and AJ.
Well, that's the thing. And like yardage for the back five has been a problem for Souths at times the last couple of years, especially since Dane Gagai left. So I think Whiten helps out tremendously there. I think defensively, there's going to maybe be some issues, not with his contact. Like he, when he hits blokes, he really hurts them. It's great. But his decision-making can be a little bit poor sometimes. And it is hard to teach an old dog new tricks, but as long as they're able to sort of sort that out, then I think he's going to have a really positive impact. I still don't know if I was at South, if I was in charge of South, if I would have chased that signing, because maybe there's just somewhere else you could have spent that money. But I am expecting him to have a really big and really successful season on a personal level, at least.
That's a good point you make out of yardage, Nick, because it, all the good teams do it now, don't they? Like you're not in the game really unless you can scamper out of your own end or barge out of your own end, and that's been a problem for South. So I don't know. I mean, I go back to the Trell. He's had a break. He's been injured. Does he suddenly come back? To me, he still has all the same deficiencies as a fullback that he did when he left. Like he's obviously a wonderful football player, but is he busy enough? Are his defensive reads good enough? Are his kick returns good enough? Well, he doesn't return kicks enough for me. I'm really over Latrell catching the footy and wandering around trying to find a winger and then not touching the ball in a set of six. You know, I want some physicality from Latrell from the back. I want involvement. And I reckon they need that right from the first couple of rounds. I just think he needs. He's still got lots of areas as a fullback where I see his real weaknesses.
I think that's the biggest question mark, and we haven't really talked about him yet until these last couple of minutes. But this team goes as Latrell Mitchell goes, and I don't think he's ever going to be the James Tedesco type, putting his hands on the ball 35 times, throwing himself around at a million miles an hour. And I don't think we can possibly expect him to change into a guy like that at this point, given what we've seen from him from the last couple of years. But I just do hope, and it's all we've got left at this point, I just hope that he can just touch the ball five more times in the game. Because I don't think any player in the league impacts the game as much on a per-touch basis as Latrell Mitchell does. And I understand part of that is because he picks his spots and chooses his moments of when to strike. But just get a little bit more involved, please, for the love of God. That's all I ask from him. I don't ask much more. Just touch the ball a few more times. I hope to God he's been working on his conditioning and he stays healthy this year, because if they can get a fit Latrell Mitchell for the full season who just gets a little bit more involved, that takes his team from outside the top eight to a top four team. He makes that much difference. I'm still so high on him as a player when he's playing well and when he's confident and when he's getting involved. I don't think there's anyone like him. I think he's an absolute unicorn. I'm not saying he's the best player, but I'm saying that in a lot of ways, he is sort of the most awe-inspiring player in the sense that, like, I can't really think of anyone off the top of my head that can change a game by themselves quite to the extent that he can when he feels like it. There's probably a couple of guys, Reece Walsh, Tom Tukovic, whatever, it doesn't matter. But he's right up there. And we just didn't get enough of that last year. Like, I know he was hurt and then he came back. He had that stupid suspension that saw him miss the last game of the season because he hit a bloke in the head with 3 seconds left in a game that they were losing by 100 points to Newcastle. Oh, God, that was ridiculous. But if he just keeps his head on, and maybe having one of his best mates in Jack White in there and his other best mate in Cody Walker there, and this is it. Like, this is the whole thing, right? I love Latrell Mitchell more than most people. He is my favourite rugby league player to watch. And he's my close personal friend, and I've made excuses for him time after time. I've repeatedly told people they're wrong when they tell me that he's not a fullback. I've repeatedly told people, just wait, it's all going to work out. But you have to draw a line in the sand this year. I think they've done everything they possibly can as a rugby league club to accommodate him. No club, I think, has done as much to keep one player happy as Souths have in the last couple of years with Latrell Mitchell. They've signed his mate. They've let him play fullback. They've let him basically do whatever he wants if the stories are true when it comes to training and all that stuff. And I think that to a degree, some of that has paid off in a lot of ways. I know he's become a real leader of that club, and obviously he's really well liked by his teammates and very well respected. But that has to translate to him having his best season in a red and green jumper this year. It just has to, because they've done everything they possibly can to keep this guy happy, to motivate him, to get him to want to love playing footy. as he sometimes doesn't look like he enjoys doing. And so with all of that, with all of those factors in play, if he can't fire up this year and be the player they need him to be, then it's a different discussion we're having in 12 months' time.
Guys, how many games do you think Latrell Mitchell has played for South?
Four seasons? It's like
how many
60,
do you think it is?
Right? It's like 60 or something, isn't it?
It's 64.
Yeah.
Mm. He's never played more than 18 games in a season for them, you know?
Yep.
And like
yeah.
all those things that you said about Latrell Bungard are true. He's got a presence and a unique attacking quality that I don't think anyone else in the league has. And just by virtue of that presence, he's such an important leader for Souths and such an emotional barometer for them. I honestly, to me, for him to be successful, it's not even about just touching the ball more when he's out there. Just be out there every week. Be out there every time. Like, I think playing every game or every game where he's available for selection, you know, like origin rounds aside or whatever, try to play every game this season. I think that's a really good, realistic goal for Latrell. And if he does that and he keeps that level of match fitness through the season, I think that'll go a long, long way to fixing a lot of the issues that you guys have both identified. You know, I hate talking about players' conditioning and if they're fit enough and if they need to lose weight or whatever, because, like, you know, on their worst day, they're better than I'm ever going to be on the best day of my entire goddamn life, you know? But I do think that, like, when Latrell came back from injury last year, he wasn't as sharp as he needed to be, you know? He didn't look as physically ready to play and impact the game the way we've seen him do it. And it stayed that way, even though he, you know, had a few weeks to sort of get it all back together, you know? You could sum up Souths in one sentence, and it's what Bungard said before. It's where Trell goes, so goes Souths. And he's someone that I'm looking for a really, really big season, man. Like, fully commit to this. Show me how good you can be. Show me the greatness that I know is in there that we see every now and then. I want to see it every week. I want to see you out there every week dominating this league like I know you can. Like I know you can, man. Just show me what I know is already there.
I don't think Souths can hitch their wagon to him as a barometer of how they play, because
they've done it to themselves, though. They've positioned themselves.
Man, look, you know me, like I would, you know, I love my wife dearly, but if Cam, you know, if our lock forward came and sort of asked me to move in, I'd, you know, I'd have a really good look at it. So, you know, like, they've got some very inspiring players that work their backsides off and empty the tank for that football team. They don't have to look far for inspiring leaders who get it done for him week in, week out. I guess for me, with Latrell, like you, he is a wonderful, wonderful, gifted footballer, one of the best I've seen. But you can't take this sort of, you know, this stuff that's floating around in the air and retrofit it into the requirements of a modern fullback, because they are required in this version of NRL to be able to do certain things. And that is to be very busy around the ball, help get out of your own end, clean up. They're just on their toes all the time. That's what the game demands. And we can't pretend that Latrell's so good so he doesn't have to do that. Like, the game's different for him. He's got this and this, and he can, you know, stop time. He can't stop time. He's got lots of assets in his game. I just still, to this day, I'm not convinced they're assets that are the best suited to him being in the number one jersey.
What do you think they should do instead? Because they've put Jack White in there?
Well, I don't know. I mean, there's no point thinking about it, because that's...
It's not going to happen. That's the thing, mate. Like, you might be right, but we're not going to find out, because,
mate,
he's not...
I saw Jai Gray in the Charity Shield.
Oh,
he looked good.
That's all you need. That's all you need.
Got around the park well. But the thing is, the only thing he wasn't good at was catching the football, which, you know, is a fundamental part of being a fullback.
Look, I long for Latrell to be successful, but I want to see him, a bit like you, Nick, I want to see him on the field. But, mate, look, get the footy off a kick. Don't run around here, find Alex Johnson. Just fucking run hard. You're one of the biggest blokes on the field. Get out, cause some damage, get in the game. That's what I need to see from Latrell. Just want him in the game a little bit more.
Latrell, even if it was just once a week, does the Carmichael Hunt running dead straight until something stops him.
Yeah.
Like, well, but I would go to a Souths game, and then when he did that just once, I'd be like, yep, that's enough. I'm out of here. I'll see you next week.
Get around that, though. Like, people, like, you know, you can run 4 meters and flop over a try. What is Souths, as a player, you're going to love that. You're going to love seeing your best player tear headlong into a group of blokes that hate him and want to kill him. That's great.
That's why I felt like Brisbane really fed off the energy that Reece Walsh was giving them last year, because he was that fearless forerunner for them. And Souths just need a bit more of that from Latrell.
Yeah, yeah. All right. We love Latrell. I think we've got it all sorted out.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, we've barely talked about, Damien Cook, Cam Murray, Alex Johnston, all fantastic players. Haven't mentioned Campbell Graham, who's going to miss half the season. That's not great.
Can I say something that might get you mad at me?
Yeah.
I thought, according to his own very high standards, Cam Murray had a pretty down year last year.
Yeah.
Well, I told you he wouldn't like it. But I thought he was pretty good. Yeah, he was pretty good. I didn't think he was Cameron Murray, as we've come to know.
I don't think that's terrible. But, I mean, mate, the whole team was absolute bastards in the second half.
Yeah, I know, but normally he's such a shining light. Fortunately, I think it's an easy fix. And I've said this on like six of the shows, but I'll say it again. The guys that had the long World Cup tour at the end of 22, there's a reason so many of them had down years in 23. Pre-seasons matter. Training in the summer matters. So to that end, I think Cam Murray's going to be absolutely out of his mind this year. I think he's going to have something close to not just the form of old, but I think one of the best years of his career. I think that stuff that you're talking about, Lutz, that process of finding winning again, I think that's something that he would take really personally, because he's someone who is very dedicated and he is a winner in that sense. So I think he's going to have an absolutely monster season. And that wasn't like it was bad last year. It was like a 6 or 7 out of 10 every week.
That's fair.
But I think we're getting back to the old Cam Murray. It's all going to be happening again.
Boys, before I came on, I was reminiscing about a conversation once at a press conference with Wayne Bennett, when he called South predictable. But then he said, I mean it in a good way. Mm. And it caused a bit of a stir at the time.
Yeah, because they put 50 on the Knights team that Bennett coached that day. That's why it was so funny.
Forgotten about that.
But I think for me, South looked like a football team last year that had done something really well and it had always worked. And when it stopped working, they didn't know what to do. And the coaching stuff, that to me is also an indictment on the coaching and the way that team was put together and run every week. So I've got question marks about the flexibility and the adaptability of this football team. Do they have a plan B? Do they have a plan C? What if plan A isn't working? And I'm just not sure Dimitriou as a coach has shown me yet that he's tactically switched on enough to make those changes.
I'm glad you bring that up. Lutz, because I've been digging through the stats. I'm not a huge stats person. I think we rely on them too much sometimes, but other times I think they can be very revealing. So Souths are sixth in the league for line breaks last year, which is pretty good. That sort of tells me that there's a pretty well-constructed attack there, because you're not going to be just busting the line every time. Most line breaks come from well-constructed play that creates like a one-on-one or a quick play the ball, something like that. But then they were last in offloads behind the 172, a fair way back from some of the top teams in the competition. And I think that speaks to what you're talking about, that the attack got a little bit stale. Well, not even stale, but like just everyone kind of knew what was coming and not everyone can stop it, but you do need to have more variety to your play. So that's something I would love to see Souths do a lot more this year. I'd love to see them offload the ball a lot more, promote the ball a lot more. And I think that they've got guys who can do it, particularly sort of in their bench forwards. Like, I know Havili didn't play much footy last year, but he's a really strong offloader. If Shaq Mitchell's going to be around as well, he's good at it too. We know Cam Murray can do it. Jai Arrow was really good at it when he was playing in the middle of the field. On the edge, he sort of gets more into running lines and all that, and it's probably not as big a part of his game. We know Keon can do it too. Yeah. I would love to see them offload more. Use all that speed that you have in your spine. Use that speed, attack through the middle of the field of broken play. Get Damien Cook surging onto offloads. Get Cody Walker coming off his hip. Get Trell pushing up from the back as well. Promote the ball. Use your speed. Use your skill. Use all this athleticism that you have over the park. So I take your point there, Lutz, but I think there's a fix there. I think there's a way that they can sort it out. How am I higher on Souths than either of you? How has this happened?
Yeah. That's I don't. I have not said that I'm low on Souths. I said that I was flabbergasted as to how last season went.
We're just working through our feelings.
If you think I
have
not,
it's healthy. It's healthy.
If you think I've not picked them in my top four, Nicholas, you've got another thing coming.
I'm not low on them, but like if I'm objective and I look at what Brisbane put together last year and the level Penrith plays at, I think there's a gap. Like there's a gap, and I just don't and how. I'm not quite sure what Souths need to do. I think they need to change something to bridge that gap. Put it this way. I don't think they can just turn up and get up the field and go, hey, guys, let's do our trick. Let's do a shift to the left. And
we'll never see it coming.
They'll never see it coming. So I just and it's sort of a full circle convo because I'm back to Ilias now. Like we need something a little bit different from players. So I hope Souths can show a bit of that this year. Yeah, Nick, I'd love a bit more ad-lib footy. If any team in the comp's built for that, really, it's Souths. Like, they've got these fabulous
footy players. I'm hoping Jack Whiten's craziness rubs off on everybody else. That's what I'm hoping for.
You don't know what you're signing up for.
You say that to me all the time, but, like, you just talked about how boring and predictable they were. And you're right, they were.
No.
There's no happy middle ground.
I've seen how crazy it gets with Jack Whiten. You've seen what it's done to me. I'm a shell of it. I'm a wreck of a bloke. But I'm a shell of a man. And I don't want that for you guys, man.
Well, at least if he plays center or back row, at least he's only on one side of the field. So we have chaos side and law and order side. There we go.
You've got the left, and then you've got the side where Lachlan Ilias is standing watching everyone else play football.
Correct, yeah.
Sort of standing there with hands on hips and going, hey, guys. Yeah.
That's a good plan. I see no issue. Hold
on.
Who's a young guy you're excited to see, Phil?
Well, I think I might have said it last year, but it's got to be Moale. Like he looked good is he still young? Feels like he's been young.
He looked like he trimmed down as well when I saw him on Saturday.
I didn't recognize him.
Yeah, I thought that's right. Yeah, neither did I. I'm like,
yeah, when he scored that,
he
try,
looks
I was
he's
like,
thinner
wow,
and he's
that?
Got no hair.
It's
yeah,
like Davy Moale as well. Really,
he feels like he's been the big next bright young thing for 5 years, and I'm going to look at him and go, oh, he's 28. He's got three kids. But look, I think Souths have lacked a bit of that sort of.
He's only 20, by the way.
Yeah. So I'll go with Moale.
He debuted when he was like 12, so it's fine.
Yeah. So it's just that to me. You know, you need those kids with that really super dynamic leg speed, that ability to get through a line, that ability to bring something different. And I think Souths were probably rolling there through their middles last year. You bring one guy off, and you bring the next guy on. It's kind of the same guy, just with a different, you know, different name, different haircut. So I think he can be a guy that can be a genuine difference maker.
I agree. And we'll wait and see who ends up playing right edge, but whether it's Arrow or whether it's somebody else. But the middle rotation's looking pretty damn good, I will say. Like, I think the fact that Talis Duncan was probably the only bright spot in that team in the last few weeks of last season, one of the only blokes who well and truly put in, week out. The fact that he's not guaranteed of a spot because of how good Sean Kepi looked the other night and how well David Moale's offseason has apparently been. Like, the fact that he's not even guaranteed to have a spot in the 17, I think bodes well. And I think that that's one thing Souths will always have is competition for spots in the forward pack. They've always been pretty good at that. Just like your Raiders, Nick, just like a couple of other teams, they've always had really good depth in the forwards. And whilst I don't think they have a prop who's like an absolute killer, like a James Fisher-Harris or a Payne Huss, I mean, who does have one of those? Or your Tarpon is also quite good. Fine. But they've got a bunch of guys who are all really, really good. And if your props can be really, really good, you look at every other spot on that field. Dynamic players in the back row, one of the best locks, if not the best lock in the world. And now a really exciting center pairing in Campbell Graham and Jack Whiten, if that's the route they want to go down. Cody Walker, Latrell Mitchell, Alex Johnston, but just weapons all over the field. Damian Cook as well. And so there's a world where this all comes together really well and Souths are great again. And we're sitting here in September enjoying them losing another prelim to Penrith. But
exactly.
A tradition unlike any other.
Oh, that's my favourite day of the year.
Talis Duncan looks like one of those kids who came out of junior footy and I reckon he's played every position on the field at some point. He just looks one of those kids who said, coach, yeah, I'll do it. I'll play here. I loved how he just had a crack last year. He just seemed, in games, he was popping up everywhere. And some guys had no idea where he was meant to be playing or what he was meant to be doing. And I'm convinced he didn't either. But I think he did enough. He's won me over last year. So I'm sure we'll see plenty of football from him this year.
Yeah, I'm a fan of his too. I love his aggression. I love his leg speed. I love his explosiveness. I know it's a tough bench to get onto, but he'd be on my bench for in Las Vegas for sure. Like the idea of him just coming on, punching around the middle of the field, awesome shit.
You wrote a bit about Ty Munro today as well, Nick.
Yeah, I'm a real fan of Tyrone Munro's. Got the couple of games in.
Unfortunately, missed the first few weeks of the season with a collarbone issue, but
Got a couple of games in last year. You know, still was very, very young. I think he's still only 19 now, but got a great turn of speed, a real knack for big plays. I thought it was one of those things. He got into first grade, took a lot out of the experience, and then when he came back to reserve grade, like things had changed. Things were different. And he was awesome in the reserve grade grand final, scored the winning try, scored a hat trick in the state championship. He's not just fast, although speed is something I think Souths kind of need from their back five. I know you love AJ, guys, but he doesn't really have the gas anymore.
Yeah,
but Tyrone Munro does. But he's also got like nice plays in him. Like he can put a center kick in. He can finish in the corner really athletically and acrobatically. It might take a little bit of time to iron out some of the kinks in his game, but I think he's a beaut. I'm a real, real fan.
Mm. Yeah. So as I mentioned, I think you said this during the Raiders preview, Nick. You said if you don't pick your team about the finals, you're a coward.
That's right.
Effect. So I've really doubled down on it to make sure I'm definitely not a coward, and I've put the fourth.
All right. I'll
finish sixth,
and then win the grand final.
Yep, I like it. I'm in.
There they are. There's my rabbit eye, boys.
Nick, you haven't picked a team to come second yet, so I'm going to assume that's who's going to be there.
I think Souths do fix a lot of the things that we've talked about on this show, but like I've said on a couple of previous podcasts, I think the level of competition across the league is going to be a lot higher this year.
Mm.
So I think they slot in at fifth. Mm. And I think in week one of the finals, we get the death match. we get Rabbitohs Raiders, and then the show ends.
Can we reenact the Rock Austin promo before WrestleMania 17 in the week up leading up to that game?
Well, one of my favorite dumb stats is Latrell Mitchell has never played against the Raiders.
As a South player,
So I presume he won't play for some reason.
Can't wait to see. I was looking up the guys who've played more finals games for Souths than he has since he got to the Souths, and it's quite sad. Guys like Harm Selle, Liam Knight, Blake Fast played as many as Latrell. It's not good. It's very much not good.
If Alex Johnson scores the 25 tries required to beat Ken Irvine's record this year, will you run on the field?
Yes.
Will it be like that college basketball game in the States the other day where a team broke a 25-match losing streak and one fan rushed the court?
I actually didn't see that.
That sounds like a good highlight. Yeah, that's a good highlight.
It's a weird one, right? Yeah.
Before we go, are we high on the Las Vegas? I don't love my team. I kind of like the idea. I just wish Souths weren't involved in it.
Well, I'll be there. So,
well, you're gonna love it. But they've had to shut down four Queensland Cup teams and four New South Wales Cup teams to get them there. But I think it'll be worth it.
I respect it. But we'll see what happens, mate. I'm just looking forward to having a good time watching some footy. Hopefully. No one gets hurt on the fake grass at Allegiant Stadium, whatever it's called. But just on Johnston, really quick. That is a weird one. I have thought about that a lot, Nick. Like, what is going to happen? Because like Buddy Franklin reached a milestone in AFL, which, while still being very impressive, is nowhere near as impressive as he got to 1,000 goals, which I think only four or five blokes have done in that sport. But He didn't break the all-time record for goals. He just became like the fifth or sixth guy to do it. And 20,000 people rushed the field. It's like, Alex Johnston's going to do something. Like, at any point before Johnston was, 24 and already had 100 tries, at any point before that, Lutz, can you remember any time in our lifetimes where people would have been like, oh, yeah, someone's going to break Ken Irvine's record? Because I can't. I can't remember anyone sincerely, like, bringing it up as a possibility for a single player.
See, I think you've answered your own question there, because the all-time try scoring record has never been something that could realistically be broken. I don't think it really existed at the forefront of sort of the league consciousness or the league discourse. You know, sorry to use fucking stupid corporate buzzwords or whatever. But you know what I mean? It's not like it's something that we all thought about. And I would say that until, you know, Billy Slater and Alex Johnston started getting a bit close to it, I would say there'd be a lot of fans who wouldn't have ever known who Ken Irvine was.
Well, there was famously that tweet from Willie Mason saying we should call the top try scorer the Ken Irvine Award. And then everyone was like, we do it. We already do that.
Yeah. I would say that before they made that change, there'd be a lot of people who wouldn't have known.
Yeah, no, I think you're probably right.
Who Ken Irvine
was. So what do you guys think? Like, in all seriousness, what do you guys think happens? Like, if he breaks that record, it's a South home game at that wretched Grand Canyon of a stadium. Like, what happens? What do you think happens?
I don't think... Well, You go first, Lutz.
A bit of a tradition of people on the field, though, right? So they do it after the game. They do it all the time. Rugby league doesn't have that tradition.
That's true.
I would imagine they would whistle the try and then go back and prepare for the next part of the game. I reckon they'll do stuff all, but I hope so because AJ's, everyone goes, he just catches balls and puts them down. But I disagree with that completely. I think
they're morons, Phil. They don't watch rugby league. They're a bunch of.
He's a beautiful finisher. His timing. I mean, how often do you see wingers fuck this up every week in the NRL? Timing runs incorrectly, stuffing up tries. You know, that's an absolute art form to do that, and that's to me the sign of a proper football player. Like he understands.
He also had like four or five try assists last year as well. Just backing up and dabbing these little kicks and stuff. He's a fantastic
maybe,
player.
Maybe he should play fullback and Trell can go to the centres.
Here we go. Actually, we're cooking with gas now.
I'm just asking questions.
He's not a great fullback. As a Queenslander, I'm stunned he hasn't played that. That's a whole other argument. But I think he would have done...
Yeah.
And he would not have ever played a bad game in a New South Wales jersey if he had been picked.
I will never advocate for a South Sydney winger to be picked for Origin again after the Nathan Merritt incident. So I will refrain from speaking.
I'm happy for no South players to get picked for Origin.
I think the thing to look for with AJ, if he does break the record, is probably to the times in the past where people have broken the point scoring record. So I remember when Darryl Halligan did it in 2000 and then Joey did it in 06 and then Thurston and or Smith might have broken it, and then Smith sort of surged ahead and did it. When it happens in the moment, everyone will celebrate it. It'll be really big. There'll be a nice presentation on the field after the game, and then that'll probably be it. But like, Souths are great at celebrating this sort of stuff. Like, I think about how nice the stuff. Yeah. Oh, mate, get the bell out. Like, I think about the game against Manly last year after John Sattler passed. You know what I mean? Like, that was beautiful.
Great evening.
Everything they did, from the jerseys to playing him singing the song on the PA system after the game, all great. So Souths will get it right. The league just has to get out of their own way and let Souths do it.
Do you think they should let them rush the field?
I don't know. Cool. I mean, Lutz, it's a Sharon Fisting thing. Don't care for it.
Okay, that's fair. But also, can you imagine the funniest thing possible? Which is Alex Johnson
running on the field.
No, hang on.
Passionately tongue kissing Alex Johnson.
Well, yeah, that's not funny. That's just romantic, mate. I'm not sure what's funny about two guys who are clearly very good friends. The funniest thing that can happen is he scores. I don't want this to happen. The funniest thing that happens is he scores. Everyone rushes the field. Everyone's having a great time. They're cheering around the field. And then suddenly the camera pans back to Jerry Sutton and he's blowing time off.
So the Atlanta Falcons in the early years of the Atlanta Falcons, right, where they were really wretched, they couldn't win a fucking game. And in those days, having the 1,000-yard rusher was like, if you couldn't make the playoffs, that was something to hang your hat on. And they had a bloke on the team. I can't remember his name, but he was a pretty good running back. And in the last game of the season, last quarter, gets over the 1,000 yards. It's massive. It's huge. They stop the game. They have a big presentation for him. All sorts of stuff like that. They're going crazy.
Oh, no.
They're crying in the seats of the Georgia Dome. Game restarts about 10 minutes later. Tackle for a loss of 5 yards. 1,000-yard season gone. Up in smoke.
Dave Hampton was his name.
Dave Hampton, that's it.
That is so funny.
Uncle Dave, yeah.
Poor Dave.
He got 1,000 yards the next year, so it all worked out okay.
All right.
Look, it'll probably happen. It'll probably be the early game at the Gold Coast on a Saturday.
Yeah, that's the thing I'm worried about, right?
It'll be like 11,000 people there and most of them aren't watching, and that's probably how it'll go down.
Well, as someone who's club rested a legend, so he could do a significant historical thing at home. Sometimes you don't want that.
it could go very wrong.
I was all
I'm looking that. At. I'm looking at round 25, Rabbitohs hosting the Knights. Maybe that's the day.
Could be it.
Well, that's 20. I actually think it's more likely he does it next year.
It could. I think honestly, yeah, if you had to,
it's a lot of tries.
If I was betting on it, like if you had to bet me, I think it's if Souths make the finals this year, I think it's happening in the finals, which would kind of ruin the moment completely. You can't have a field rush in the finals, can you?
Imagine pulling. There's no field rush for Ireland next year. No,
there's going to be a field. Boys, there's going to embrace debate. Everyone, get in touch. Will there? Should? Oh, two questions. Should and would there be a field rush? I don't know. I generally don't know.
I know it's an AFL thing. I say no.
It's like, a double no for me.
This has literally never happened before.
It's not very AJ either. Like, he's not the field rush sort of guy, you know?
No, that's true. I'm just asking questions.
My God's going to go, come on, fellas, let's rush the field. And it's
let's
be
go,
one,
boys.
One
first
lonely,
man over the...
Run to center field.
There's also a huge workplace health and safety concern with heaps of drunk people on the field with a bunch of fired up NRL players. I think...
What if the guy with the hot dog thermos gives him a hot dog out of the thermos to celebrate?
Oh, that'd be so good.
See, part of the reason that the Lance
it converts his own try eating the hot dog.
Yeah, there we go.
This has devolved into South Sydney fan fiction. I do not care for this.
All right, we should get out of here. Phil, anything to promote?
No, nothing to promote. I'm just looking forward to the footy season. Actually, yeah, I'm really looking forward to the footy season. Go the Bunnies.
Go Bunnies. All right, Phil, thank you so much for coming on. We will see you, hopefully, in the finals.
Thank you, gents.
Thanks so much, man.
And joining us now to talk all things West Tigers, a pod debut for Josh Barnett, host of the West Life podcast, who ended the Pasco fiasco. Welcome.
Well, I like to think a small part. First time, long time, boys. What an honour to come onto my favourite NRL podcast, including
Thought it was only fair. You had me on last year before the Souths game. Thought it was only fair that we return the favour.
That was fun. That's it. Yeah. It's fun getting... That's something I tried last year, is getting opposition fans on to preview whoever is going to beat the West Tigers that week. So, we had Clarkey of Titans, probably the most famous Titans fan in Australia.
Hang on. Amy Shark? Ever heard of her?
The singer. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, this Campo is disgusted right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, I'm in love with Amy Shark, so, you know.
Yeah, right.
Tough start to the pod, but
yeah,
we're going to bring it back. We're going to bring it back.
If it's not played in Triple M, I probably don't know it.
That's fair enough. We'll
start with the happiest thing. So we had Simon and Mads on a Patreon special straight after the announcement that Pascoe and Hadjipatos were leaving the club. I didn't have you on because I knew you were doing your own show basically at the same time, but I did listen to that. And I've never heard a couple of fellas sounding happier than you guys were on that show. And it wasn't because you won a grand final or even made the finals. It was because you sacked a couple of suits in the back room.
Yeah. Well, the last time we made the finals, I was 22 years old and, a much, much younger man. We were very, obviously very happy with the news. It was a Christmas come early. I think it was 2 weeks before Christmas. And obviously our shtick kind of became the anti-Pasco and Lee guys, and through mainly because of my co-host, Rob Bashara. He was always adamant and that Pasco needed to go. So, it finally happened probably, a season or two late, but, some might say even longer. But, if there are any doubts, I think Shane Richardson has basically proven in the space of a month and a half that it should have happened earlier because he's already kicking goals. So
I think there's a veneer of professionalism at the club that hasn't been there in seasons past. Nick, you were out there at their media thing a couple of weeks ago. What was your main takeaways from all things Tigers?
The interesting thing for me with the Tigers is it is very much a fresh start. You know, Benji's in as coach, total, whole new board in, new era, whole thing. The Tigers have had a lot of new eras over the last 13 years now. But what I like about this one is, for some reason, I feel like there's not a whole lot of hype or expectation or anything like that. Like, if you remember a year ago, we're all very optimistic because we always want to try and be optimistic at this time of year. We always want to see the Tigers do well. You know, I think it's no secret that me and Bunga both have a really big soft spot for them. And, you know, Sheens was in and the 05 boys were back and all these big signings were in. And we're like, yeah, yeah, here we go, here we go. And then it was like dreadful. Mm. Then it was like, I would argue, as low on ebb as the club's ever been at. I thought in 2022, they were a bad team that played badly. 2023, they drastically underperformed for some of the players they had on the roster.
We came 16th and we thought, well, we can't get worse than this.
I know, man, it's tough. But this
it's the most West Tigers thing ever. Like, I know, literally. Bro.
Is to get the wooden spoon and somehow finish lower the following year.
Yeah, never had the wooden spoon ever in the history of the franchise. Get the wooden spoon and think, well, it can't get worse. And literally, yeah, a new team comes in and we drop to seventh. Become the first 17th team since, what, 2003? When was the last time they had dropped from 20?
99.
Yeah, after South and the mergers and stuff. Yeah, what an honour.
But yeah, but so this time I feel like there isn't as much expectation. It's not like everyone's saying, yeah, it's a new era. Or it's not like everyone's saying, yeah, things are going to change. Things are going to be different. I do think things are going to change. Mm. And I do think things are going to be different. But I feel like there's not as much expectation around the side anymore. And I think a big part of that is Marshall being in there as coach.
Yeah.
I think everyone wants to see him succeed. I don't think that's a secret. To say that, no one's out here sharpening the knives for Benji. I think everyone wants to see him and the team do well at this point. Like, the dog has been kicked so hard that there's no more kicks left. The story now that everyone wants to see, and that includes the people in the mainstream media. I think it includes a lot of people in other forms of media too. People want to see the Tigers do well. This is the point of the story where things are meant to change and things are meant to come up a little bit. And I think they can. Like, it's never hard to sell me on Wes, but I do think there's going to be some good stuff happening this year. I don't think you're going to finish 18th at least. Let's put it that way. Like, it actually can't get worse this time.
Yeah, there's no expectations. I kind of feel like it is back in, I would say, 2013 when the Luke Brooks debut happened, Tedesco. I believe that was the year Tedesco did his ACL. So we knew we had this young crop of players coming through and we had our eyes on incoming year, saying it's going to get better, it's going to get better. 2014 came along. The team looked pretty good. I think a lot of people forget in 2014, we were in the top eight until about, round 18 or 19. I think Robbie Farah might have gotten injured and they just basically fell to shit and... fell out of finals contention. Like, we had obviously the Moses, Tedesco, Woods, they're all young coming through. And the team looked like it was building towards something. And then, of course, Ivan Cleary came along and, they all got off the bus, as he said. So, and it's been, that was 2016. So it's been 8 years since of just like, hitting the reset button, but they haven't hit the reset button in terms of, going all in on kids like they are now. They've kind of tried to band-aid it with overpaying has-beens and with all respect to Madalino, Josh Reynolds and that crop coming through. And to be fair, Ivan Cleary actually had them playing pretty well for a minute there, like when we beat the Storm down in Melbourne. They were grinding away some wins and then Cleary knifed us in the back and went off to Penrith and won 3 premierships. So,
I bet he's regretting that decision.
When you say it like that.
Yeah, went to coach his son to 3 comps. So, the anger towards, I think, us West Tigers fans.
You beat them in that one game. So, who's laughing, really?
Beat them in Bathurst last year as well. Like,
Which game are you talking about? We've been
the one where they blew him a kiss and then he blew the kiss back later the next time you played.
We beat him in the Origin week too when they had nine players out at line.
Yeah, what a win it was.
Jacob Little ran the length. I don't care how many players you have out. If he's going the length, then that's what's the old gag bunker? That's when the balloons come out.
That's the balloon moment. Yeah.
I'm glad you bring up the youngsters, man, because I do think that's actually something that the club has done quite well over the last couple of years. They've totally overhauled and revamped a lot of their junior pathways. And it's the sort of work that you only see the results of it 3 or 4 years down the track. They brought in a guy named Matthew Betsy, who I think is now the head of football. He's sort of been pushed up the ladder, but he's done a really, really good job at revamping those paths to first grade. Mm. And when you're a team like the West Tigers that has such a large catchment area, you know, and it's an area that's the fastest growing area in Sydney now out in the Southwest, you've got to capitalize on that. That's the best resource that you have. And it's one that if you tend to it, if you look after it, can be never ending, you know? And yeah. I know that Jareen Buller didn't come from that part of the club's junior network, but to me, he's sort of the first of what should be a lot of really, really talented young guys coming through, guys like Solomone Sukuru or Talon De Silva, who got a couple of games in last year, or Kit Lali'i, fellas like that. These are guys that you might not have heard of now, but they're the players of the future. That's where the future of the Tigers is. So talking about these juniors, who are the guys that really stand out to you as the guys that can carry this club forward?
Well, obviously, Lockie Galvin is probably the number one name that everyone would go to. He's part of the West side of the juniors coming through. He's still only 18, still 18 years old. He's already in the top 30. They're calling him, I hate this because Luke Brooks was the next Andrew Johns. I've heard people call him the next Cleary, which is scary because we've been hurt with these kind of hypes for halves coming through before. But he's also 193 centimetres tall kilos.
He's a big lad, man. Yeah. He's a big lad. He's tall. He's got a good half a head on me. Like, not a little fella by any means. He's bigger than Cleary already, I'd reckon.
Yeah, so he's going to be a big, big half. So him and Luai down the track, I guess it could be a good sort of mix as well. Obviously the Fainus, we got them from Manly. If we can contain them from not doing things, like they did in the trial. But we, to be honest, like a lot of West Tigers fans are like worried about that. But part of me is like, we kind of needed Jared Weir-Hargraves' loose unit in the team. I'm kind of sick of the Tigers being the joke, the pushover forward pack. And I honestly, from watching the first trial against the Warriors, that's something that, if there's anything that gives me confidence, I feel like Stefano looks fit and ready to go. He was kind of, he was in Origin squad last year, but I feel like he was not quite his best towards the end of the year last year. Clem was pretty good for us last year. Our forward pack is looking good. It's more, the ability to score points and the halves for the first hit out, Sullivan and Caesar, they've never played before and they looked fairly in sync, as much as you can expect for two guys who played literally the first 20 minutes have ever played together. So there was actually organisation. We saw kicks, hitting the grass as opposed to landing on the fullback's chest. Caesar was kicking early, got a repeat set. Another thing we're not really used to as West Tigers, just, I don't know, a bit of smart football coming into the team as well. I feel like there were glimpses of an adequate football side in the past, but they just did dumb, stupid, like West Tigers things. It's become like a meme, a West Tigers sort of player, a West Tigers losing a game that couldn't be lost sort of thing.
What I like about what you're talking about there is I think those are elements that can raise the floor of this team. And I think that's the first step, is creating a team that is going to be competitive every single week. And the easiest way to do that is to have a strong forward pack and just a half decent kicking game. When you look at the names in the Tigers forward pack, I think you're right. I think Clemmer was solid last year. I think the Origin experience actually hurt Utoi Kamanu. He came back in it. I don't think he was playing with the same confidence or whatever, but he's a player that I'm a tremendous fan of. And I've sort of been waiting for the breakout season for a couple of years now, but I think it's a good chance it happens here. I thought John Bateman was pretty good in patches last year. I'd be interested to see how he'd go if he's playing in the middle of the field, because I think he'd be really, really good at sort of tightening up that middle third, really leading the line speed as well. Isaiah Papali'i was disappointing of their major recruits last year. He's someone I'd be looking for a lot of improvement on. But I think there's guys there as well who could really improve under a coach like Benji. And it's hard to say what exact sort of coach Benji's going to be like, because he's literally never coached a team. But before he got the NRL job. But everything out of West, the one thing that all the guys say is Benji knows exactly what he wants out of you, and he really simplifies your job. And to me, that sounds like a good way to get through to a playing group, a good way to sort of get blokes who are a bit low on confidence, had a tough couple of years. If they know exactly what you want off them, you make it easy for them, then I think they're more likely to deliver. You know, I think someone like Fanua Pole could be in for a really big season. You know, he's a tough, strong dude. They've been more with playing him at lock the last couple of years. I kind of like him more at front row.
Yeah,
Justin Matamua is, I keep hearing all the time that he's a really, really talented passer in the middle third of the field. Like, he could be a good 13. Haven't really seen it at the top level yet, but he's another guy that I'm really keeping an eye on. And then Api Korosau, who I thought in such a busted team last year, was excellent. Excellent. Like, my estimations of him actually rose last year because he went from Penrith, where he was a really good player, but there's a lot of great players around you, to West, where nothing was working. They signed Brandon Wakem, played like 15 games in the halves. They signed him 2 weeks before the season started. There was just not a whole lot doing anywhere, but Appy was still dangerous, and he was trying every single trick he knew every single week just to get stuff going. You get a guy like that, you put like a stronger, more consistent forward pack around him, the floor of this team goes up. And once the floor goes up, then you can start putting a roof on the place.
You got to remember too, Appy had his jaw broken mid last year. And I think had that not happened, maybe the team would have found a bit more, I'm not saying that would make the finals or anything, but to lose Appy, I mean, it's kind of like, I'm trying to think of another sporting reference, like Giannis from missing from the Bucks. I was going to use my guy there, but I thought I'll use one of my non-teams. Yeah, the Bucks playing without Giannis or something.
No, speak your language. Use just your say teams, Jokic, man. Mate.
Come
just
on.
Do it, brother.
Yeah, the best player in the world, Jokic.
Yeah. It's the thing is, it would have been so easy for Appy to just put the cue in the rack a little bit and just sort of go through the motions.
Probably he did, I thought.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's just clearly, I agree with you, mate. Like, I came out of last year thinking even higher of Api Korosau as a player just for the work ethic that he showed down the stretch, particularly when, as you said, there was just nothing doing. You mentioned Brandon Wakem. He won't be there this year. Josh, how do you see the hard situation shaping up?
Yeah, I mean, it's a weird sort of year because you know Luai is coming. So, does it become a bit of an audition? Because, one of those guys is obviously not going to... I mean, Caesar's only a short-term solution. Sullivan have offered all this money over 4 years, I believe. He coming through the juniors and Adam Dwayhe coming back mid-season, who will probably, to be fair, I think he kind of has to admit that he's a centre. As much as I did kind of like him at six, I guess he'll probably come back. If he comes back in first grade at all, he'll probably start out in the centres. But, there's a lot of question marks over. There's no one's rubber stamped who's going to be the guy with Luai next year. It's an awkward one, I think. But I mean, judging off one preseason game against a second grade Warriors side, it's probably not the best. But apparently, we heard today from inside the club that Benji very much was just telling the team to go forward and not do too many plays or anything. They didn't want to show their hand in the game. Hence, they did stuff all against 12 men for so long. So, it's maybe we'll see a bit more spark when they're playing for points as well. So, the scoring points thing is going to be, I think, maybe the main issue. Like you said before, that if you got a forward pack, in the game. So I think they're going to be in the game a lot, whether or not
they
can score points. And my co-host, he labelled us, he said this at the start of last season. He goes, they remind, to mention one of my other teams, he goes, the West Tigers remind him of the Denver Broncos. They just can't score points. And that doubly hurt me, obviously being a Denver Broncos fan and knowing that struggle. So both my teams, just couldn't do shit with the ball.
A lot of low scoring grinds.
Well, what do you want to have? Because you really can't get guys who are more diametrically opposed than Caesar and Sullivan in respects to where they are in their careers. So, what do you want to see from them? And with Luai coming, there is really clearly only one spot going forward. And with Fino at the club as well, it does seem like that's probably what we're going to be seeing in 2025 and beyond. But how much do you think Fino will be involved in what they do this year? And I guess, Nick, you can answer that as well after Josh's time.
Yeah, I wouldn't think. I mean, it depends how they go. They go halfway through the year, then Benji might start, trying things out. I hope it doesn't get to that, and I hope that they come out and, yeah, these Sullivan and Caesar just lay a platform. It's just all the one percenters. I mean, it's such a cliche thing to say, but like I said in the trial, what they were doing, just get repeat sets, get the kicks right. Like, just they had the Warriors coming out of their 10-meter line as opposed to they get back to the 30. Like, it's just controlling the game. Like, Luke Brooks, he could do great plays or flashy things with his speed or something. It was just the halfback, like, steering the ship. It just was never really shown. Occasionally against South, so I always thought it was quite funny. Bungard, you said that Luke Brooks always played his best games against South, and it did kind of feel like that. It was pretty funny.
It was hilarious.
That's all right. I think you guys have got the laugh over us the last few years. But just the little things, the small things. I don't want them to come out and them to be the second coming of Benji Marshall and do flick passes and all sorts of tricky things. Just get those little things right, especially Caesar at halfback. I think Bud Sullivan might be the other way, might actually show he can create something out of nothing and, get something happening, with Buller outside as well. But, just control the game. But I think Appy, obviously having Appy at hooker who can play half, like he might as well be a second.
That's true. That's a very fair
point.
Yeah, so, Kemper, how do you see that 6-7 shaping up?
I love Aiden Caesar. That always is true. Have, always will.
East Hills Bulldogs, shout out.
A player who I honestly think, like, he's had a good career, but I really do think we've probably got the absolute worst version of it. He's so talented. He can do so many different things. He's got a left boot like a fucking howitzer. Like, he can send that thing to the moon. He's 32. It's probably not going to work out the way I wanted to for Aiden Caesar, but I really like him for West because I think he's a perfect bridge to the future. You know, like, Brooks had to go, that had to change for player and club. Both, everybody needed a fresh start. They've got Luai coming in on the big deal. Caesar is good enough to start in the NRL, do a credible job of taking the team around the park, giving them a very strong long-range kicking game. But also, if he's not doing the job after 6 weeks, or if he can only get through about 10 or 12 games, which I think is a possibility because he was injured a lot in his last couple of seasons in England, he's not too good or on too much money or too prestigious a signing that you couldn't get halfway through the year, drop him, and then go with Latu Fainu and Bud Sullivan the rest of the way. So Caesar's perfect in that regard. I think he's a really nice bridge for them towards the Luai stuff. Caesar said, when I spoke to him at West, I spoke to him out there the other day, he said he wants to play on. He said, I'll play till my legs fall off because I'm loving being back in Sydney. He was telling me a story about how when he was training for the East Hills Bulls, his father would come down His father would come down and watch training and kill time by doing chin-ups in a tree on the side of the footy oval. And I was like, that's good stuff. That's the energy that this West Tigers team needs. So I really like Caesar. I think I don't know if he'll be a starter or anything like that, but I think he'll be perfect for the job that West have brought him to do. I've been a real fan of Bud Sullivan since he came into grade at the Dragons. I think he was a bit of a victim of a pretty bad situation at Saints over the last couple of seasons. I think the idea of him working under someone like Benji is really, really appealing. You know, I haven't seen as much of Latu Fainu, but he comes with pretty enormous raps. You know, they've signed him and the two brothers. I think Latu is the real prize of the three. He's the one that everyone talks about, like he's going to be a guaranteed superstar. But a Caesar-Sullivan halves pairing, I think, is streets ahead of anything that West had last year. They had Luke Brooks, who the change had to happen. They had Brandon Wakeham, who is fine as a backup, maybe. You know, Adam Dewey, I've always liked him more of 5'8 as well, but I think you have to kind of, like, he'd have to admit himself that that shit might have sailed because he just can't stay on the field, the poor bugger. But Caesar Sullivan, I think, is a really good base. And it goes to what I was talking about before. I think the two of them being there lifts the floor of this team. And once that happens, then all sorts of other things can start happening.
Yep, totally agree with all that.
The rest of the back line is a little bit of a concern for me. That's the big question mark for me on this team. Yep. We got Jareem the Dream at the back. He's really cool. Can't wait to see how he goes. 2-5 is a lot less clear to me. They got Justin Olam in on the swap deal from Sean Bloor. I have my concerns there because he did sort of drop off pretty badly for Melbourne last year. Maybe a change of scenery makes him hungry again, gives him that fire. But, mate, what are you thinking? What are you thinking we see in the back line, and how are you feeling about the signing of Olam particularly?
Well, Sean Bloor was my absolute man crush. He was my guy.
You and me, baby. You, me, and Bloory.
I'm still sad. Watching the ceiling at night, thinking about him, wondering how he's going in Melbourne.
You know that dream where they come in through the window?
Don't text him. Don't text him, man. He's not worth it.
I want him to come. Yeah, come in on my birthday, Kate. Sing happy birthday to me. So I was obviously pretty sad. I think he'll kill it just quietly on Sean Bloor. He'll play Origin next year.
Love it.
But I get it. We needed an outside back. The stocks and the forwards. It made sense as much as I hate to admit it. We're just outside backs. They're very, very thin. Staffatoa, he looked good in that Cowboys win. And then, they kind of dropped off a little bit. He was a bit inconsistent. He had some games where we thought, wow, he's the center we need. And then kind of, would get brushed off a little bit too often. Towards the end of the year as well, I like the look of this Lob guy that we got from Alex Lob from the Dragons. He's a big unit.
Tallest man in the world.
Yeah, and he caught a high ball. Another thing we're not used to as West Tigers fans, as soon as a ball goes up in the air, we're like, oh, shit, this is going to be good. But this guy, he's 197 centimetres or something, a big, tall wing. Kicks goals as well. Again, something the West Tigers have struggled with is kicking goals in recent years. When you think about it, there's a lot of things we struggle with when you think about it. But, goal kicker, tall. It might be our next Pat Richards is kind of how I'm thinking with him. And he was second leading point scorer in Cup last year, I think. So, if he can come in and do a job on the wing, just to be a bit of an attacking weapon, I kind of compare it to Melbourne bringing in Warbrick. He became a real weapon under the high ball for them. He had the game winner against... Who was the game winner against?
It's the Roosters in the finals.
Just what a weapon, especially with the rule now that you can't tackle an attacking player in the air as well. That might have changed things a little bit. Like Daniel Tupou always, he has his best game of the season against us, it seems. Just all these big wingers seem to carve us up. So if we can kind of, fight fire. Obviously, we've had Nofaluma in the past.
A ground-based winger. Except for that one try against Manly that one time.
Yeah.
Lives on the ground.
Yeah. So, playing above the rim, to use another basketball term, would be nice with him. In terms of other outside backs, it's Tupou. He's off to the Dolphins, so it's like, is there much point running with him as much as, we think he's a bit of a young gun coming through? A bit surprising that we let him go to the Dolphins. But I like Naden. I hope he can get quite fit. I rate him as a center. I don't really like him on the wing. I think I quite like him in the center. So outside of that, so Lob, Naden, Olam need another winger. I mean, the depth-wise as well, as soon as we have an injury, it's Charlie Staines. I know I just mentioned I like wingers that are tall, and Charlie Staines is, I think, my height. So, but Charlie Staines is a good finisher, can do a job on the wing. as well. But yeah, it's a whole lot of, it's nothing to get super excited about. It's just a matter of, yeah, just doing a job. If Kepa Ola is in the centers ever again, like, fuck me, I'll switch teams.
I felt a bit sorry for him because I actually don't mind him at second row. And it was clear that that was the position they were putting him towards. And then the second there was an injury and they were putting him at center and wing. And he's just like, I've forgotten how to do this. I'm not into this. I don't like it. No one likes this. Why are you doing this to me? I got to tell you, man, I love the lob is the next Pat Richards.
Mm.
That's good stuff. That's the sort of.
That's what we want.
That's what we want. We want young players compared to more niche dudes. It's like how Benji Marshall compared Lachie Galvin to Scott Hill.
Mm. Loved it.
That was good stuff. That warmed the heart. I'm with you on Naden. I'm a big fan of his as well. I think the problem for him at West has sort of been his best and his worst have been so far apart. Mm. If he's narrow that gap a little bit, I'd really like to see him get some time at left center. There's three young fellas who I'm pretty keen on to get a run in the outside backs at some point. Solomon Alemolo, Solomona Fa'atape, and Solomone Salkuru. So a lot of souls on the roster.
Mm, mm.
Three guys, all with a lot of upside. I remember watching Solomon Salkuru. I've seen him in the juniors for the last couple of years. I think he's a real powerful tackle busting, offloading type center. He's probably not ready for the start of the season, but he's someone I'd like to see them introduce sooner rather than later. And I think that's what you got to look for with the backs at West. You've got to look for upside. Yeah. You've got to look for young fellas who can come in and really show you something, because some of the blokes that have been there for a while, I think, like Stafford Tuller, like Charlie Staines, kind of feels like the book's written on them a little bit. And maybe they can do a job for a couple of weeks. Maybe they can sort of fill in for a season. But in terms of like long-term guys, you know, blue-chip guys who are going to be there when all this turns around, I think you got to look to the young fellas in that department.
There's Josh Felity as well coming through. He debuted last game of last year. There's a bit of raps on him as well. So, yeah, it's a whole lot of, as you kind of just put, the kids coming through, have a crack, I guess, later in the year. Yeah, that's kind of, I just don't want the season to get, again, halfway through the year. I think it's been like this for the last 4 years. You just get halfway through the season and the season's done. And you mentioned how, like, Papali kind of checked out. Like, obviously, they're getting a lot of money and it's their job to go out and win. But at the end of the day, if they're not in finals contention and in a game where if you're 5% not in the game, like, you're well behind in rugby league, I want them to get towards the end of the season and there's still a glimmer of hope, something to play for, like, not just, fuck me, when's Big Bash season going to start? Like, it's just give us a whole season of, like, something to be proud of, not just, it gets to July and, we're calling for the end of the season and hit the reset button again.
You want something to believe in again, man.
Mm. Yeah.
It's been too long. Been way too long.
I think that there is, not just from you, not just from us talking today, but in general, it does feel like it's a bit more cautious optimism this year than in years prior. I think especially last year with Sheens and Benji in 05 and we're all just going to have a great time again. Things did get a little bit, things went a little bit overboard. People got a little bit too carried away. And we've been guilty of that before with the Tigers, Nick. But I think that tonight, especially with what Josh has touched on, we've been a bit more reserved about our expectations for this team. And this time, the only way literally is up. Like, things cannot get worse. And I think they will improve. I really do. I don't think they'll make the finals, but I think that there's lots of young guys to keep an eye on. I think Benji Marshall, I've no doubt that he will be successful at this, like he's been successful at everything else he's ever done, except for rugby union. And I'm not too bothered about 2024 if I'm a Tigers fan. I think that Josh has touched on those expectations pretty well. I think you just want to kind of be in and around the hunt in August. And that's the best you can hope for this year. But you get a really top-of-the-line player in Jerome Luai for 2025. And as long as a couple of these young guys work, that's the thing, right? Like, if you have 10 scratch-offs and two of them win, then you're laughing. So if a couple of these young guys can really work out, I think that there's good times ahead for the West Tigers. But again, I think that we might have to wait a year to really kind of see that stuff start to pay off.
The thing that helps to looking forward, and one of the reasons, like, I was never a huge Luai guy, but I was very keen to get him because we need to get over the hump to become a place that players, we don't have to pay overs to get. Mm. So with Luai coming, I'm not sure what our cap space is like. This is why it's a kind of tangent a little bit. I wish salaries were public and we could, like American sports.
Been advocating for that for a long time, man.
And also another thing I preach on the on my show that you guys, the jersey numbers and names, I preach this all the time and I get hammered for it by our listeners. I don't know why, but...
preaching the choir, buddy.
Yeah. Also
half,
talking about
preaching to half the choir on the jerseys. All right.
Well, how would we know what position James Tedesco was playing if he was wearing 23?
I don't sound like that.
There's literally like 23s in every game. It always seems like players.
Yeah, I bring up the bench, and then these people don't know what to say. It's always great. Anyway, like, sorry. Back to your point.
What was my point? What was I saying?
I don't actually know.
I don't either. We got all riled up. You were talking about Luai and cap space.
Right, yeah, yeah.
That's how we got onto it.
That's right, yeah. So I don't know how much cap space we have, but I feel like we don't. We've gone out and paid big bucks for Luai, but I think we've thrown a lot of money at keeping these kids around for a while. But another signing isn't, like, we should be talking about in the hunt for games. We should be in the hunt for the next big, like, a free agent to come along and play for the club as well, because we've got Appy, we've got Luai, Dream Bullock. Like, there's, I think a lot of free agents might see the core of the West Tigers and say, that's actually somewhere I want to go. And I think...
And every player in the league loves Benji.
Yeah, and it's probably, and especially obviously the Kiwi players as well. So, that's a good point too. Yeah, Benji, these kids, they're young enough that they basically idolized him as kids. So, yeah, that's appealing as well. And also the two, B1 and B2 getting kicked out of the office of the club as well. So talking about souls before in the club, with those names, we got rid of arseholes at the club. So
Bert, let's put a bow on it, man. Where are you putting them?
16th.
And all that, right? Or,
well, just the stuff I just said, I think that they are building towards something, but it's going to take some time. I think they will be better than last year. I think that, as you've touched on in a few of these previews, the competition as a whole is going to be a lot more competitive this year. I think we might see a lot more of a condensed ladder this year than in seasons past. I think the gap between the top and the bottom will be a lot smaller. And I think that they'll probably have some good wins, and I don't think that they'll be as embarrassing down the stretch as they were last year or in 2022. But I still think that there's a long way to go. Their halves and where they're going to get points from and their 2 through 5 are all still big question marks for me. Love Dream Buller, love Epi Corrissau, love a couple of their forwards, but there's just not enough there for me to justify putting them higher. Having said that, if we'd done this before the Dragons won, I probably would have had them 15th and the Dragons 16th, but it's too late. We can't change once they're locked in to the spreadsheet. So
the Dragons stay in 16th. Oh, you didn't have the Dragons last.
That show's already out, Josh. Thanks for listening. We recorded it
before the Charity Shield. And I think Bungard was hanging on to the last vestiges of the take that he was workshopping at the end of last year.
Correct.
Where he said, I think the Dragons are going to go good next year. I think they're going to surprise a few people.
I do talk like that. That's true.
Yeah, that's true.
The dizzying heights. How fucked are they, by the way, that I'm copping pelters for daring to be so bold as to pick them 15th? But anyway, I'd probably have West a bit higher if I hadn't put the Dragons in that spot. But hey, I think it'll be a gentleman's 16th. I think they'll have a couple of good showings along the way. And I think that they'll start building nicely for the future this year.
Yeah, 7 and 17. Like, is that too much to ask?
No,
7 wins.
I don't think so.
Yeah. So whatever position that ends up being.
I went for a walk this afternoon after I finished work just to get out of the house a little bit. And I'm living real near Leichhardt Oval these days. And every weekday it's open from sunrise till sunset. And I was walking past. I was like, we're doing the West Tigers one tonight. I'll walk up to Leichhardt, hang out in the ground a little bit. Just sort of soak up some vibes, just sort of try and pick up what they're putting down. And I sat there, and it was a beautiful sunset. And I was the only person in the ground. I was sitting there on the Wayne Pierce Hill listening to the wind. and it told me, it said, Nick, pick him in the eight. Do it. Do it. Oh. You love, like, you don't love this team like you love the Raiders, but fuck, you want to see him do well. But I can't do it. They've let me down too many times. I've been,
I'm proud of you. That's growth.
I reckon for the last 3 or 4 years, I've sort of said,
we've done it. We do it every year. We pick them eight every year.
This is when it starts to turn around. Here we go. Here we go. So to that end, I have them 14th, which is not great, but it's better than where they were. And I think they'll be in the hunt for the eight until maybe the last 2 months of the season. You know, but so I think they'll be a more credible footy team. I think they'll be a proper footy team. I don't think they'll be a joke like they were last year. I don't think they'll be a case of sad sacks like they were the year before that. I think they'll be a real team. I think they'll get a couple of good wins. I think we'll finally start to see some progress. And I guess growing up is realizing that, you know, progress isn't always going to be a top eight spot. Sometimes it can just be a little bit at a time. So,
yeah. That's fair.
14th for me.
Josh, you get 3 spots on the roulette wheel for team of the show. We've been repeatedly accused that we're going to rig this so that you win. That's 3 numbers.
The wheel decides.
My lucky number 8 has already been taken by the Roosters, I see. 8's my lucky number. Because of Wayne Pearce wore number 8 back when the lock wore number 8. And he's basically Jesus Christ to me. And also, I was actually born... Fun fact, I was born on the 88th day of 1988. So eight's
my favorite. Is a fun fact.
The Chinese would absolutely love me. Good luck to them. Number 9 is my other, I played hooker as a kid. So I'll go number 9.
Okay. Yep.
You
can't have 15, unfortunately, for Jokic.
I'll go 27 for Murray, though.
I like that. All right. You get one more.
And wife's birthday is gone.
05, do it.
We could pick 5.
That's my son. My 3-year-old says number 5 is his favorite number. So, there I don't know why. Right. But, yeah, we'll go number 5.
All right. Let's lock that in. 5, 9, and 27. There you go. One of those numbers is absolutely going to win. Before we get out of here, a quick thank you to the people in the top 2 tiers on our Patreon service. Go to patreon.com/rookies. You get access to our Discord server, 3rd show every week, merch discounts, entry into the Coltrane Cup, and plenty more. So, thank you too. Alex Ogicomi, Chris Abnell, Dave, Michael, do you believe the earth is flat? I don't know. Yeah, I believe it is. Murray, Rocky and Rafi, Stu, Weak Gutted Wayno, Ashley and Martin, big, beautiful ball playing front rowers. Don't just fall out of the sky, you know. Broncos legend, Adam Reynolds, Bruce the Palm, Butsy, Chivaka Snuffleupagus, Dan Cullinane, David, an anonymous backer, Ed Burton, El Presidente de Valverde, Rodrigo Eduardo IV, future Clive Churchill medalist, Keon Colomatungi, give me the fucking ball. Godspeed, little doodle. I can't yell because Zoom cuts my microphone out. I was saying Boo Earns, Jason, Joe, Joel Wrigley, John, Josh Brandon, Kick South out of the comp, Lachlan Hancock, Luke Charles Smidmore, Mads Taylor's version, Matthew Duggan, Mr. Beefy, Morgan Watkins. My name is Nick Canton, and rugby union is my favorite type of rugby. My ding ding dong is hard and I'm sad. Never trundy. Nick Kotrick lives on my street, subliminally coaching him to run it straight. Oh, what about that? Send him off. Send the dirty get off. That was diabolical. Allback 78, Podcasting Crisis, Reese Brown, Roxanne Clark, See You in Vegas, Shunter, The Black Vegetable, Thor, Tom Hardy, Was. We now have a shout out to everyone who loves these listens. All this is please send $5 to @TheMeatBugger. Please fucking change that one, mate. I fucking hate it. Westlife Podcast, West Tigers are back, baby. Thank you so much for your support. To everyone in the lower tiers and to everyone who just listens, thank you as well. Give me the fucking ball has sent me.
So, that comes from me, my 2 brothers, and my old man were at the pub once over summer. And I have no idea how it came up, but one of my brothers, I think it was Snap, the youngest one, started talking about the gritty, the dance.
Okay, yeah,
and Dad said, what the fuck is the gritty? And Snap gets up to show him, and he was sort of half-assing it. So Pup stood up and said, get out of the way, give me the fucking ball. This is how you do it. and hit the gritty in the beer garden of the Coldale RSL. What
fantastic.
A
I've hit many a gritty on people on FIFA this year. So that's good to know.
I only half know what that is.
You're the very last name on the sponsor sheet as well. Look at you. Thank you.
Yeah. But, Wes usually towards the back end of things, aren't they?
Oh, now it's sad again. But to that end, anything to promote, but perhaps a podcast about the West Tigers based off a pun name of a boy band, perhaps. I don't know.
Yeah. I was trying to think of a name that'd be memorable when I first started. Started and I thought, Westlife. Obviously, I do know who Westlife is.
Were they Brian McFadden or Ronan Keating?
I don't know, but I just knew.
Oh, okay.
I knew that people would go, what's the name of that podcast again? Oh, yeah. It's the boy band, West, like, make it easy to remember. And I think that has.
It was Brian McFadden. Ronan Keating was the one called Boyzone. So there you go. Terrific. Couldn't tell you a single song from either of them, but I know who they are.
But yeah, hopefully not as. Yeah, we kind of became known for being angry and saying things across the line a little bit about the management, the club, but hopefully
yeah, if you can get through a season without being featured in mainstream rugby league media for crooked comments about the chairman, you'll be doing well.
Oh, any publicity is good publicity, though.
That's true. That is true. To be you probably did get a bunch more fans as a result.
Yeah, we got a few bumps from being in the paper.
And if you don't know what I'm talking about, look it up. It's not that hard to find. All right, let's get the hell out of here. Say goodbye, Josh.
Thanks for having me, boys.
Thanks for coming on, man. Really appreciate it.
We really do. Say goodbye, Campo.
Goodbye, Bertrand.
And it's goodbye from me.